Creoso, and welcome back to the Welsh History Podcast, and welcome to what I'm hoping will be a monthly series talking about things in a more general sense, maybe not necessarily even talking history. We might talk about a bunch of different things. We're going to freeform this, so there's not going to be an active script. I've got some points written up for this week, but the idea is to try and give you an episode that isn't the normal, same old run-of-the-mill type episode where I'm just repeating what I have on my script here, but actually has something more thought processed out from my own opinions and my own thoughts rather than just having documents that I'm working from, and kind of talk about my experience and my development of the Welsh History Podcast, about Wales, about all sorts of different subjects and kind of how they reflect upon the history of Wales as a people, but also Wales as a country, maybe talking a little bit more about other aspects of both history and politics and society that maybe we don't talk about quite enough, or maybe you want to know more about from my perspective rather than from, say, purely from an academic perspective. So what we're going to talk a little bit today about is about the role of being a researcher and how you would do research for podcasts or for writing, and what makes up this podcast versus, say, somebody writing an academic book or someone writing an essay in school or all the different things that come with that. So let's start from the beginning, shall we? So how have I found sources? How do I look for them? What's been my process over the years to sort of change my picking and choosing of different things? Let's start first off, I guess, with what I'm choosing from to begin with. And in the beginning, when we started the series, because it was a very general series talking about more or less about Britain as a whole, rather than specifically Wales, because you wouldn't have necessarily loads of historical or even archaeological sources to work from in that period, say the Iron Age and earlier. So you're kind of working from an overall aspect of things. We don't know enough about the ancient world in Britain to give ourselves specific kind of ideas about the tribes, about the roles that went on. We don't even fully know, you know, was society a patriarchal society? Was it a matriarchal society? Was it built on some sort of system that works differently than what we're used to, simply because we don't have written information? We don't even really know kind of what the gods were, other than a general sense of them. We don't really know what the entire origins of so many things when it comes to how we get to where we get to. Like, is the Welsh language, for example, as a descendant of Brythonic, is Brythonic the ancient language that was used with some additions from Latin, or was Brythonic the out development of Latin into the Britain's language? We don't really know that either. Like, there's so much we're clueless about, really. And when I say we, to be fair, I'm talking about people who actually do study and research and do the work that I haven't been able to do or can't do in actually digging up information and trying to do the archaeology necessary to identify these things. Unless you find some ancient Britain script written in some language, you're never going to know, you know, how they spoke. And as far as we ever know, they don't have a written language, so it's impossible for us to tell. So when talking about sourcing and documents, we have to look at that. So when talking about Wales before, I would argue, the end of the Roman period, you're almost always going to talk a lot in generalities around Britain. Thus, the reason why the early focus of the podcast is so much around Roman Britain and the history of Roman Britain, because while there are incidents in Wales, they're very compressed, they're very short, and then they just disappear, and you don't talk about them again for so long. You know, if you think about it from the aspect of the big descriptive Welsh issues of Roman Britain happened towards the beginning of the Roman invasion in the first 100 years or so, where they're dealing with the tribes of Wales, or at least the Roman interpretation of what those tribes were, and how they worked around them or fought against them or negotiated with them. There, all of those kind of points of discussion. And of course, it's all through a lens that's Roman. So we don't really know a lot about what the Welsh population thought, did, perspectives. And even when we talk about Wales, we have to be cognizant of the fact we're really only talking about tribes who may or may not have seen themselves the same as other tribes in Britain, let alone, you know, a European perspective, which they wouldn't necessarily know even exists at this stage. So with all of that said, we know that there were trade that went on between Europe and Wales. We know there were things that were going on that spread the idea of Wales to other places. We know that it was written about even by early geographers from Greece, talked about them. Of course, they were rumors and a lot of speculation without any real understanding because they'd never been there themselves. And everything would be interpreted by an ancient lens. So when you keep that sort of in mind, it dictates a lot of our understanding of how this place worked, what it looked like, and who the people were that lived here. So if we move aside from that, how do you get sources on that? So a lot of my sources were very large sources, talking about books that were talking about quite a lengthy time period from early 10,000s to into the Roman period. And they would talk about all sorts of things that were found archaeologically, because from a historical perspective, archaeology is your best friend, because that's what gives you the understanding of kind of what the day-to-day life of a person living in Britain would be. However, it doesn't give you an overall viewpoint on what their politics were, what the structures of society were. We only sort of can guess that. Even religious worship is a little vague in this period, and we don't really understand it. When this comes back to a podcast format, so making the decisions I made with the podcast, I knew I couldn't cover things in depth. I wouldn't be able to do enough specifics on subjects to give them their due sometimes. So with that, I had to pick very generic, larger. I always start from the idea of I have a large source document which covers a great length of history in a small format, and then I have a short form document which then I can refer to, which might go into specifics. And the good news was, for me at least, was in the early days I had a lot of original source documents, because my own interest in Roman Britain was such that I had a lot of documentation, more than I had of like medieval Wales or especially later Wales. And because of that, it helps when you're doing this kind of thing, because then you can actually go to the actual original source and say, well, Tacitus said this, you know, so-and-so said that, this one said this, da-da-da-da-da. So all of that interest was very much in my wheelhouse, and it was something I had already started collecting, so it made it a lot easier. When I do this podcast, one of the things that I want to point out is that it's always aimed at trying to... I made the decision early on that the podcast would be kind of around the level of, like, to use North American terms, high school level, sort of in UK terms, we're talking probably your 10, 11 kind of age groupings, because I wanted to sort of keep it at an educated level, but not necessarily so complex that people were going, I don't understand what you're talking about. And sometimes you can get really into the weeds with the academia of it all, and it can get very difficult. Like if you read, say, something written by a professor who's talking about things in a very technical and or a very completist standpoint, it's very difficult to explain that to someone. So I wanted to make sure that it was like a first-year university course level thing, where you're not entering into a situation where you're completely confused, right? And somebody listening to the series for the first time would have the ability to pick it up and not be completely struggling to keep up or bored or, you know. And so that's the reason why in a lot of respects I've stuck to the platform of we're going in chronological order. I've talked about and dithered about the idea of getting out of chronology, and there may come a time where I start to do that if the podcast goes forward and hits especially the 2000 barrier, which is kind of my end date for the chronological version of the podcast. Then we're going to start to cycle back and make decisions about, if we're still doing the podcast at that point, then I have to make decisions of, do I cycle back and go into subjects that maybe when I was originally talking about them, I didn't know very well. And over time, I've become much more informed on them. Or maybe I want to feature something I skipped because I just either didn't know or didn't have enough time to cover or just didn't want to cover at that moment. But now I've gotten a lot more background in it. So all of those things have kind of played on my decision making when it comes to this version of this historical document. I wanted to make sure that as we go forward in time, that the podcast continues to at least offer content that's interesting, but also content that I'm interested in as well. Because if I'm not interested in it, you won't be, because you'll realize very quickly how little interest I might have in it, which I don't want you guys to think that I'm going to be doing that or consistently doing that. So, and the one thing I will say is that when we talk about sources, is that my source choices have changed over the years, in part because I found some flaws in one of my choices, which is I started to use something called Academic EDU, and I don't want to throw them under the bus as a website, but I did find some of their sources were not strong, and there was a couple of occasions where something I quoted in the podcast, I had to walk back because it turned out that wasn't true, or at least it wasn't documented correctly in the article I read, So since then, I've kind of stayed away from it just because I think it's not as peer reviewed and it's not as careful. So sometimes you're getting documents that aren't very well thought out, I guess is how I would describe it. And so sometimes the resources and the research can be a bit flawed. For that reason, I've kind of stayed away from that and tried to focus much more on actually one of the things I've been doing a lot lately, especially with as we move into the Victorian era, is I'm really focused on looking at the University of Wales Press specifically, as they put out books all the time. They're all academic books, so I don't have to worry that, is this some guy who's just decided to write his own book? And it's because it's an interest, and maybe there's some sketchy stuff in there because they don't necessarily know the true history, or they're trying to skew events to their own ideas and perspectives, which certainly happens. Bias is a thing for sure. Don't ever believe that an academic doesn't have bias. Every person who talks about history has a bias that they're coming from, even if they don't necessarily know it. I have a bias because I come from Canada. I've lived in Wales. I have Welsh ancestors. I have a positive bias towards Wales. I don't look at sometimes things from a negative. And I usually struggle when it comes to dealing with perspectives that are not necessarily my own. So I have to get and be active in looking into those and citing them, because honestly, it's very easy to skip them because you're like, well, that can't be right. And then you find out, oh, actually, yeah, it can be. Because I mean, I was once upon a time, I was a big believer in the King Arthur theories that have floated around for years and years and years. And it's taken a while to weed myself out of it. I mean, I did an entire episode just basically talking about how King Arthur is a mythological figure and is not someone to necessarily believe in. I don't know if that's the right word, but there's so many people that run around and think that it's almost like conspiracy theory level. You need to weed yourself away from stuff like that because it's so easy to get caught up in kind of what something might be, and you're excited because it shows, especially that, you know, there's this figure in Welsh history who's incredibly unique and important. But then you start to realize, well, if we start to walk this back a bit, are we suddenly going, maybe this isn't quite what I'm thinking it is. Maybe this isn't quite what we want it to be. And maybe what we really know about history is what we really know. And it isn't different and it isn't unique and it isn't special necessarily. But that doesn't make it bad. It doesn't make it worse. It doesn't make Wales or, you know, any place any less important just because you lose and just because the country is conquered. It doesn't mean that there isn't special things about it. Can you play the alternate history game and say, you know, what would it be like if, you know, Llywelyn the Great had united all of Wales and had been able to kick the Marcher Lords out? Would he have been able to control and hold during, you know, John's reign and then into the following kings, had the United Wales risen up and held under Griffith ap Llywelyn and his descendants back at the beginning of the 1060s, would that have actually meant that when William conquers England, Wales is like Scotland, where it's not so easy to take the country and you can't just walk in and start to take bits and pieces away? So when you get to Edward, you know, instead of him basically already owning 50% of the country and he's just having to conquer a specific set, he now has to take on the entire country and he has to deal with the consequences of taking on a much better organized and better controlled military. If you're like me and eating healthy is a bit of a problem, let me bend your ear a little bit to eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggies. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfasts, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Also, if you're looking for gourmet meals, try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/WelshHistoryPod50 and use the code WelshHistoryPod50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code WelshHistoryPod50 at factormeals.com/WelshHistoryPod50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th-century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th-century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
Because the problem with Wales was, is they were poorly financed and the military generally was not very good because they were spread out. They were small. Most of the petty kings were not necessarily wanting to work together with the bigger Prince of Wales. And then as they start to disappear, of course, England starts to take over all these petty kingdoms. And then they start to eradicate the history of those petty kingdoms to the point where you don't have linkages back. And so it becomes much more difficult. And so the question is, would Wales as a country survive? Can you play that game? Sure. Could you do a podcast on that? Absolutely, you could. You could do an entire alternate history all along Welsh history about this, because we have loads of time up until, I would say, at least the Tudors, where there were candidates who could have taken Wales independent. After that, I'd argue it's not that possible. It just, at that stage, they're too embedded within England. They're too much commonality. And I know people will argue and say, well, yes, but there's, you know, they were running still on some form of Welsh law. The Welsh language still existed, da, da, da. Yeah, but people started to think of themselves differently than they did prior to that. And the idea that you were different is a lot less, especially once you left the communities you lived in. If you lived in Wales and moved to, say, London, or if you got into the Royal Navy and ended up fighting overseas, the less likely it was that you would keep your language, less likely it was that you would keep your native understanding of things. And so you migrate into the new culture and suddenly you're just a let's say Jamaican, I don't know, like coming up with different options, someone from like British Guiana or from, you know, Virginia, who has a Welsh last name, but is much like myself, it's only a last name. It's only an ancestry. It's not a firm link to the country. You don't necessarily have the understanding of the trials and tribulations of that country. Do you want to know about it? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. And some that do will work much harder to try and understand it, but it doesn't mean that it's the same as, say, someone who was born, raised, and believed all their lives in the country that we call Wales, the nation that we call Wales, if you want to divide it that way. I've gotten really off topic, but basically that's the concept, right? So you have to kind of put your biases aside, take yourself away from the understandings that you think you know, and kind of understand that as time goes on, alternate history is a great idea. It's fun to play with. You know, I've read books on alternate history. They're entertaining, and certainly they do show, you know, the idea of what if in World War I Germany and Britain were allied, blah, blah, blah. All of those things are cool. They're fun to talk about. They're fun to theorize on. But we know what we know because this is history we're living in. You know, unless there's a multiverse out there and we trip into it. The realistic presence that we have here and now is that this is where we are with Wales. This is where the history of Wales is. So what we want to look at and want to avoid is doing a lot of speculation, a lot of guessing, and I want to avoid a lot of the really political pro fill in the blank, pro English perspective, pro Welsh perspective, pro, you know, Roman Catholic perspective, or whatever you want to fill in, Irish, German, whatever. What I want to do is at least try to present this as close as I can to what would be an academic education. Am I still going to slip? Yeah, obviously, because that's the way we work. We work with a bias. So, and biases can even just mean what I pick out to talk about versus what I don't pick out to talk about, right? Like right now, we're in the episodes that are going out currently as this podcast goes out on our podcast feed, we're talking about one individual who is influential in a way, but mostly is influential because they have been a really initially well written about someone who documented their own life who is female. And this is something that I know a lot of people in the past have asked me about, is where are the female sources? Where are those sources of for women who are just as important as the male sources, who contribute just as strongly as the men do? Why don't we have those? And I've always had to say, we just don't. And it's not by choice, for me anyway, but we just don't. Now we finally do. I'm going to cover that. I want to give that as much time as I've spent on, you know, all of these kings and princes and lords and, you know, people like that, the Henry Tudors of the world, that I give to them. I want to give it to people who aren't necessarily in that category and understand that. So, and I know I've talked about this a bit in the episode, but I just wanted to clarify that we're going to try and do more of that, not less of that. We're going to talk about people who may be seen as underserved in society or underserved in history, because it's important that they are a part of the Welsh history. The black immigrants who come to Wales are just as important as anybody who was born or native or can go look at their history and go back 10,000 years and say, I was in Wales since before Wales was Wales. All of those people contribute to the current nation that we have, and they are just as important and need to be talked about because their history is important. Their origins are important. The understanding that they bring to the country are just as important. So we can't ignore that. We also can't ignore people who necessarily aren't covered because they don't fit into the norm. The weird religious group that, you know, became popular in Wales at a certain time and brought thousands of converts back with them to their native lands. Maybe the different groups that were forced to move to Wales for, be it because of wars or because of other things, or maybe they just migrated. And we'll talk about people like me who've come back to Wales at different points and kind of what their thought process influenced. And there's a lot of expats from other nations who have moved to Wales for the first time, who maybe either had ancestry there or maybe were just curious, and kind of some of their perspectives, because they'll be a little different as well. I know my own perspective on this is very different. And one of the things I can say, and I may have mentioned this in the very first episode I ever recorded, I'm not sure, is my first experience in Wales, and one that was very common, was people asking me why I was there and being very confused. And I always found that really funny, because I think most North Americans find Europe fascinating, and especially if they have ancestry from Europe. You know, they're looking at their history any more than, say, like a someone who is African who ends up in North America because of slavery, or maybe they move later in life or later in history, I should say. They're going to look back and want to know about more about Africa. They're going to want to know about their homeland. They're going to want to know the people that they came from. And not everybody, for sure, but enough that I think there's an interest in, and it's something that when you come from there and you come back to Wales, your perspective on it is so different, and it's hard to explain. So when people go, well, why are you here? You know, isn't this crazy? Why would you even think about moving here? You know, our place isn't as nice as your place, blah, blah. Well, it's all a matter of perspective. Grass is always greener, no matter where you move. Whenever you're moving to a new place, unless you're moving because you were forced to, there is kind of this like, well, it's going to be better there. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. Largely, it's just different. You know, like I've lived in America, I've lived in Canada, and I've lived in Wales and in England. And in every single place, there was good and bad in them. And some parts of it that are good are different. Some parts of it that are bad are different. And you just have to understand that when you're talking about that kind of thing. So now that I've traveled, this is what this podcast episode is going to be like. I'm going to be just kind of wandering down strange paths. So I hope you stick with me on that. One thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is about how history is perceived in school, the effect of things like YouTube and podcasts on history, and how I've seen history or other academic pursuits changing over time, having taken classes at university level, both in the 2000s and in the 90s, and how I see it changing nowadays. One of the things I would say is that we always have to accept that pop history, so in other words, the History Channel, if you want to call it that, and its perspective on history is always going to be very much about the entertainment and the, you know, selling to sell. It's not really about education. It's argued that it is, but it really isn't about education. So I think that's something you have to have perspective on and understand, that those kind of things are great. You know, the YouTube channels are great, but not every YouTube channel is built the same. Not every podcast is built the same. Not every podcast holds itself to the same perspective. And certainly there are some people who will and do offer, and I would even argue, no, I'm not taking myself out of this. So understand that you can't take what I'm telling you on a podcast and go, yeah, that's right, and use it in an essay at university and quote and cite me and not have it come back to haunt you. So don't do that. What I would say is use those sources, if you, getting back to the source idea, use them if you want to give yourself a background on something, and then go in depth and find the sources, because it always comes down to the fact that written sources are usually better, unless it's somebody who actually was at the event reciting what they saw, or video of, you know, like September 11th attacks on the Twin Towers. we have video evidence of that. We can watch it. We can hear people's voices when they talk about it right down to the minute it happened, right up until months and years later, and get a good perspective of what's going on. But if you're talking about someone from like the 1500s, you're going to want to lean into written sources who have much better understanding, have had the ability to read, you know, the different perspectives written in different languages and given different interpretations, and have multiple sources. So relying on a podcast or some TV show for that is, or YouTube channel, is probably a mistake, but it is a good starting point. I always look at Wikipedia like that. Wikipedia is something that I use, but it's not something I stop with. It's always something I start with. If I'm trying to figure out something topically for the podcast, I sometimes do start at Wikipedia because it's like, okay, I need a generic idea about what's happening during this time period. And I start to look into it in each of those spots and then find out what the sources are, because they usually have them listed at the bottom, and then go from there to those sources. And then if I'm not happy with any of that, then I start to go, okay, well, I want this subject, and I start to Google that subject. And if I can find academic work on the subject, that makes my life easier. If you're at university, you usually have access to something called JSTOR, which is a source document place where you can get a lot of articles written by academics that are sourced, that are peer-reviewed. They have a lot of backing to explain that they are actually legitimate. So that's something you can use. And if you don't know about that in your university, definitely talk to someone in your library who can show you how to use that, because it gives you access to academic magazines across the world, and it will give you an opportunity to read and interpret them. So that's a big thing. So yes, Wikipedia good, but Wikipedia as a single source bad. However, it does give you a good starting point, and you can kind of filter things down from there. So always consider that if you're doing that. And that goes for high school or anything. The other thing that I've noticed happening more and more, of course, as we develop the internet, and especially now with AI, is the fact that you know, something that was always a thing, which is cheating in schools, are definitely getting worse, and AI is going to make that worse. I had a boss who told me that to, you know, use this tool because it'll help when writing these documents, and I kind of went away from it because I didn't like it. It was a little too generic, but I can see where the use of it is, but I can see the danger of it too. If you can just go to AI and say, I want to write a podcast episode on Owen Glyndwr from 1402 to 1404, it could probably write you a podcast episode, and then you would have it. The problem is you have no idea if it's accurate. You have no idea if it has enough information and who it's stolen from to create that information. And all of that is worrying because there's going to be no referencing. So that kind of stuff is I would say tread lightly, tread carefully, because I don't think, and I'm old fashioned. I come from an old fashioned thought process when it comes to this stuff. I'm very leery of anything that comes from a computerized thought because it doesn't have the understanding of maybe this is just straight up ripping people off. And so I step very carefully from that. Also, it comes from being a content creator and getting in trouble for using audio that isn't, I'm not supposed to use. Like, for example, my King Arthur episode, I use a little snippet out of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And it's a great little snippet, and it's legal to use because it's very small in the overall stretch of the actual movie. But the problem is that YouTube hates it, and so I've had to cut it out of the YouTube version of that episode. Whereas with the podcast, I can publish it and not get in trouble on Spotify and other places. So, you know, and maybe someday I will, and maybe I will have to cut it out. But, you know, and I've had music that I thought was okay, which turned out not to be. So there's things like that. So you always have that perspective to deal with. So whenever doing things like that, if you're going to start to think of using AI, keep in mind that there's no real controls on it to keep it academically safe. And really, you shouldn't be having AI write your essay. I mean, that's kind of cheating. That's, in fact, the very definition of cheating when it comes to school. So that would be my advice. But all of these things are interesting. So what is it that this little half an hour long chat session is kind of the focus of it each month? I'll probably pick out a different topic. We'll probably talk a little bit more about different experiences I'm having. Like right now I'm getting my DNA done for my family history. I'm very curious to see what it comes up with. And I'm kind of curious to see how that works. And once I'm done with that, I'll let you guys know what the process of that is like. Let you know how it kind of works and whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, or if it's even close. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? All of those kind of things are kind of fun and interesting to talk about. So I will definitely be chatting a bit about that too. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with this. I hope you like this. If this format doesn't really work, we can always switch it up. But I kind of wanted to, like I said, get away from the usual podcast and kind of freeform a little bit. But we'll always do the podcast every 2 weeks, like the normal history podcast will be in every 2 weeks still. But this will be just a flavor tester in the middle, just to kind of see what you guys think. So please give me feedback on that. Let me know if you like this form. It will be outside of the main thread, so it won't, you know, we'll try and avoid talking too much about the current thread, because obviously if people are listening to this, they may not be up to date on everything that we've been talking about in the podcast. So it could get confusing. So I want to stay away from that as much as possible and kind of just talk about the things that are important, but not go too in depth into nitty gritty stuff. And, you know, I kind of want to talk about some of the projects I want to do in the future as well. So that will definitely be a part of this. And I mean, hey, if you're interested in talking about politics and wanting to know about the various political parties and their points of view in Wales, if that's something you're interested in, we could talk about that here. That would be the area I would talk about it. I wouldn't talk about it from a perspective of who to vote for, because that's not what this podcast is about. But, you know, we will probably go into things like this over the years, as we've always done, as they come up. But if you want to go just kind of on an aside with my experience with British politics, which was a fascinating one as a Canadian, certainly we could do that. And so with that, everybody, I want to thank you all for listening. As per usual, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can always reach me at the Welsh History Podcast at gmail.com. You can reach out to me on Twitter at twitter.com/Welsh History Pod, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Welsh History Podcast. And if you consider helping me out with funding of research books and things of that nature, you can always do that at patreon.com/Welsh History. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your feedback and for your general support through this series. And we're on year, oh my gosh, it's been a long time now. It's year 8. And it's crazy to think that in 2 months, yeah, it'll be 8 years since I started this podcast, which is just insanity in some ways. But thank you all for listening. Take care. Have a great day. Bye bye, everybody. Welsh History Podcast is a member of the Evergreen Podcast Network. To find more information on them, you can do so at evergreenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Paul Brandis, introducing my podcast, Countdown to Dallas. It's a fascinating, in-depth look at the seemingly unconnected events that led to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's based on my book of the same title. In that book and in this podcast, I go all the way back to 1939, when Lee Harvey Oswald was born into a troubled and dysfunctional family. I'll follow his transient and often violent teenage years and young adulthood, painting a fuller picture of the man who would later become Kennedy's killer. I also take a look at events unfolding in that era, like Cuba and Vietnam, and I'll unpack the conspiracy theories too, not one of which has ever been conclusively proven. Subscribe to Countdown to Dallas at evergreenpodcasts.com or your favorite listening app, October 31st.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.